This is William Fink, and this is the Christagania European Fellowship Forum. The song was a brother of ours, that was Kurt Egger. He can be found in the Christagania Forum, forum.christagania.org. He's a member there. He posts there on occasion. He's kind of busy right now, tied up, I guess. It's we all have lives to lead and bills to pay, right? Kurt's a good man, and he supplied a few songs that are available that are written from a Christian identity perspective that are available in the forum. So that's nice, and we thank him for that. Okay, it is Thursday, August 15th, 2011. I don't have a whole lot to say. I'm still trying to catch up from last week, right? Last week, the Christagania, the server that I have online crashed. And that's why now in this chat forum that you'll see a few changes, because it was hastily put back together because I had to start it from scratch. One of the things that I had lost was the TeamSpeak user database. So I had to start it over again with a fresh installation. That's probably the only thing of note I had lost, except for a couple of forum posts, because my backup was 2 or 3 days old when the server crashed. And some visitor data on my site is really inconsequential. So that's, it took 3 days to recover from the crash. Matthew and Bavaria and a couple other people have complained about not being able to connect to Christogenia during that period. That's why it took me, but when I woke up last Monday morning, my server was crashed. I know why it crashed, and I know how it crashed, and hopefully it's something that won't be repeated again, that is, I had to change some of my backup procedures and things like that. But it took me most of Monday trying to recover the old server and copying off everything that I could from it so that I wouldn't lose any data when I realized that the partition that crashed was unrecoverable. And so I copied everything, all of the data and everything pertinent, so I would have the latest backups. I managed to copy off and re-image the server. And then it took me two more days to restore all 19, well there's really 18 Christogenia websites on that server, plus my WilliamFink.net site. So recovering 19 websites and the TeamSpeak chat server and the streaming radio it runs on it, that's no small task, right? That took a couple of days. So that's how I spent last week. I did write an editorial based on my last biblical message from the Christogenia Euro Forum, which I did 2 weeks ago, and the editorial is on the Saxon Messenger now, and this month's editorial is entitled, No Good Fruit from Among the Jews Forever. Christians have to learn that Christ cursed that fig tree in Jerusalem. That fig tree represented the people of Jerusalem and the people of Judea. If they hadn't converted to Christianity by the time that city was destroyed, well, Christ said there would be no good fruit from that fig tree forever. And we can't negotiate those words. So we can't imagine that there are any good Jews. Christians should not embrace the Jews. We should excoriate them from our society. We don't need new pogroms. Vengeance belongs to God. But we can't embrace the enemies of our Lord. And that's what most of Christianity today is doing. They're worshiping the enemies of God, which is a very sad situation. I want to talk about this one video I started to watch today, and Dorcas had pointed me to this, and I have to watch it. I have to get the time to watch the whole thing. I find it pretty incredible. It's the typical liberal pap, but it's coming from a man who's apparently a native Englishman. And I don't know who set the talk power for all of the people here that are just talking over me, but I find that's rude. Please mute your microphones.
Yes.
While I give this little program introduction, we'll all get our chance to talk, right? Well, this Pie and Mash Films is apparently a small film company on the East End or East Side of London, and they did a documentary on the riots, and it's really the typical liberal garbage, where this is nothing about race, it's nothing about having a totally alien culture and pandering to it within our own culture, which causes the demise and the destruction of our own culture. And that's the natural result whenever that is done. And I made the point here a few weeks ago that the welfare state, the welfare state is a device engineered by men in order to assist in man's defiance of nature. That whenever man wants to defy nature, he has to construct huge machines or huge mechanizations in order to assist him in his defiance of nature. And a good example of that would be the International Space Station. How many billions of dollars has it cost men to defy nature so that a couple of men can float above 2 or 3 miles above the surface of the planet, and their lives be sustained. And that's the International Space Station. In order to accomplish that little feat, it's cost us billions of dollars. Well, the welfare state is the same thing. The welfare state is a huge and costly system which has been constructed in order to defy nature. And it's defying nature in this manner. It's taken an alien people, totally hostile to our race, and allowed them to dwell among us and survive and be supported at the cost of the producers among us. And that's the welfare state. It's a huge mechanization put in place so that man could defy nature, because the aliens don't belong here in the first place. They can't exist in our society and be productive beings and still have our society as we know it exist. That they're totally hostile and alien to our society. These liberals are just never going to get that. And this Pie and Mash Films, and the man who, Bill Maloney, I believe, or whatever his name is, well, he is interviewing these Negroes in this neighborhood in London who, on these riots, and it's all the typical liberal garbage about oppressed minorities needing more money for education and more free education. They don't respect the education that they get for free in our society. 90% of them don't learn anything in 12 years of school, or maybe 99% of them learn nothing in 12 years of school that they're provided for free in our societies. And what makes anybody think they're going to learn anything in 16 years of school? And most of them that attend school for 16 years still can't function as normal citizens and productive citizens in our societies. And just because you have a certificate saying you attended school for 16 years, well, that doesn't necessarily mean that you've learned anything, because our school, our educational system has become so dumbed down because we have admitted these aliens into it. So education is not the answer. The only answer is to separate these people from our society so that we could return to a normal society again. I'm going to give an example of my suggestion that these people are totally alien, and that's the so-called victim and cause of the Tottenham riots, that this Mark Dugan. It's known now, and it's being made known now, and I'm reading off the Daily Mail website, that Mark Dugan's uncle was named Desmond Noonan, and that he was a gangster. In a 2006 film biography made of this documentary of Manchester's underworld, made of by a British film company and somebody named Donald McIntyre, which ran on television. Well, this Desmond Noonan bragged about being untouchable and about how he had a bigger army than the London police or the Manchester police, and how they had more guns than the police. And he was bragging this in a documentary, and this is that this Mark Dugan was evidently very close to this uncle, who was this big crime lord in Manchester. And one thing that liberals and whites in general don't understand about Negroes is that they worship their gangsters. They worship their gangsters as heroes because they see their gangsters as getting over on the man or the white man. They see their gangsters as victorious chieftains and warriors in the battle against the white man and his law. Because the bottom line is that Negroes, blacks, I don't care if they're Jamaican or from Kenya or wherever they're from the streets of New York, they don't care about the white man's law. They consider law a white man's construct. They resist it every chance they get. So Mark Dugan is tied in with a member of Manchester's biggest crime family, boasting that they have more guns than the police. It's no wonder that the cops were nervous trying to arrest this turkey. And it's no wonder that something happened coming from it. And let me tell you, being an ex-law enforcement official myself and getting in trouble myself and being there, having lived something very much like this, you won't find out the truth of the matter from the cops. You won't find out the truth of the matter from the cops because, first, half the cops are going to seek to conceal the truth of the matter. And second, the other half of the cops, well they're going to be more concerned with what their partners on the police force are saying. So they're going to be reluctant to tell the truth themselves. That's just the way it is. We as a society expect our cops, we want to fill our streets with animals and expect our cops to apply the same methods and the same common decency to the animals as they do to the regular people in our society. That's the bottom line. Our cops can never be treated fairly when dealing, when you're supposed to take a lion or a monkey or an ape and treat them like a person. That's just not possible. But that's what we're expecting of our cops. And that's why our system today has so many problems and is so corrupt. And then when you take these aliens and make them cops, well then you only exacerbate a bad situation. And it's inevitably going to lead to the decay and downfall of our society. That's why Egypt today is Egypt. That's why Somalia today is Somalia. That these people just can't keep a standard of society that white men can keep and that white men are accustomed to. They just don't have the same care for the rule of law. They live by the rule of the jungle. And to them, that is natural. When they commit a crime and get caught, they only rue getting caught. If they feel any sorrow at all, they only feel sorrow because they got caught. They never feel sorrow because they did something terrible. And I've seen that a million times in my life. But without a doubt, that's how they all feel. Okay, Danny had a grandchild today, so Danny, congratulations. Yesterday or the day before or whenever it was, congratulations. It's good to hear that. And aside from that, what's going on? Christianity is put back together again. Most of the sites were down for about 70 hours.
Mm-hmm.
The main site was only down for about 36 hours. The chat server was down for about maybe 40 hours. But after a day and a half, 2 days, it was all put back together again. I mean, so things happen once in a while. I had extra servers, and last year I was in a much better shape to recover a lot more quickly from such a crash, but this year, I outgrew my extra servers. I just outgrew them. I couldn't fit backups on them any longer. And I just obtained another server, and I'm in the middle of dropping the old one so that I save the double cost, right? But I obtained another full server dedicated server, and I'm keeping an entire backup there so that I have an entire backup in one place, and I could recover from a calamity a lot more quickly now.
Very good.
God
willing. Yeah, I was wondering what happened there.
Yes. Chris, is stand by for coming in. In open house.
Well, Icelander volunteered to unmute everybody, and the people start talking and not realize they're on the air, and it's very wow. Disrupting. And he shouldn't do that again.
Yeah. I wanted to say a few things. Bill, when you were on that show, what was her name? Carolyn Yeager?
Well, I have another... I haven't done a program with Carolyn Yeager yet. I was on Dina Spingola. And that's something else that I wanted to mention. I will have... Tomorrow night, I'm doing my Matthew 27 part 2, and on Saturday, on my Christogenia Saturdays at 8 p.m., I will have Carolyn Yeager on. And I believe we're going to talk mostly about the artificial right, the people who tend who pretend to be conservatives but really have Jewish and liberal agendas.
Mm-hmm.
And Zionist agendas. And I'll be talking with her about that on Saturday. On her first appearance on Talk Show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you organize?
Well, we've been emailing back and forth, Carolyn and I, for a couple of months now. And she's, of course, she's not on Republic Radio anymore, and she's looking for a replacement for that. She's still on the Voice of Reason Network, of course. And I suggested Talk Show. And she thinks that it's a step down. And you know, my opinion and what I expressed to her was that it's true that Republic Radio might be the Hilton and the Voice of Reason, the Sheraton, and Talk Show is the Motel 6 of online internet radio, but sometimes the step down is the step up, right?
Well, it's certainly good because there won't be the adverts.
Well, there won't be the advertisements. You can get a lot deeper into a subject without the advertisements. And not only that, but you have a lot more control over your podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't just download their podcasts. The people on Voice of Reason and Republic Radio, that they don't just download their podcasts and post them on their own sites. Republic Radio especially, I don't know how Voice of Reason works, but Republic Radio depends on those podcasts as an income stream,
mm-hmm.
right? They charge people for access to the podcast archives.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure they're not too keen on their hosts just taking their podcasts and posting them somewhere else, right? And their hosts, from what I've seen, don't do that. I don't know if they have an agreement not to do that or not, but TalkShoe, you know, has no such limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it might be the Motel 6 of online internet radio, but it's accessible. I've never been censured for content, and I have free access to my podcast, and so does everybody else. And there's no strictures about where I post them, and I could post them all on my own site, which they are.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there's no censor of content either.
Well, right. And you know, I have my own capability to have my own Talk Show on Christogenia. Anybody that signs up to my site can go to a chat room, and it's not very often traveled, but they can go to a chat room and turn on my streaming audio and have a chat. And that is possible. It's not, you know, employed that well, but it is there. Now, I could very easily replace what I do on TalkShoe right on my own website. But TalkShoe has a more public face that would hopefully bring more people to the message or give them the opportunity to hear it, right?
Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about that program you were on. They were getting into. I don't know whether it was somebody who called in, but they were talking about how Hitler murdered that Röhm. You know, the head of the SA.
Ernst Röhm.
Ernst Röhm. Yeah, and I was reading there in David Irving's writings, well, with Goebbels, his translation of Goebbels, and you know that Röhm was he was getting ready to overthrow Hitler.
Well, yes, he was.
I mean, they were like within 24 hours or even hours away from overthrowing Hitler.
Well, right, and that's because Ernst Röhm had first there was a section of the Nazi Party that were never really converted to National Socialist ideals,
mm-hmm.
okay, that had Bolshevist leanings. Mm-hmm. They had Marxist-Communist leanings, okay, and they were never really converted. Second, and Ernst Röhm, I would count among them, and Ernst Röhm thought that the SA should replace the Wehrmacht, and he should be the head of it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And Hitler just understood that that was nuts, right? That the SA is basically, that they had their place in their time, they were well needed, and they did a great job of allowing the National Socialists to rise to power because they defended National Socialist street rallies and National Socialist speaking engagements, where the Jews and the communists were very successful in squelching all other opposition. Okay, and the SA was the reason why the National Socialists weren't squelched, right? Because they actually stood up and beat down the troublemakers at their rallies.
Yeah.
Well, which is the only thing that the Jew really understands at the bottom line anyway.
Well, the Jews, the communist Jews, the Bolsheviks were doing the same thing against the National Socialists. They were attacking those men. They were
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. And the SA protected National Socialist meetings so that the speakers were allowed to get their points across, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of things that... Go ahead, sorry.
Well, the SA had their time and place, but they were never... A military organization requires years of training at the top levels. I mean, they don't have war colleges for nothing. That they don't. There's a lot more to fighting a war than just what goes on the battlefield. And Ernst Röhm was pompous enough to think that he could step in and replace the SA and replace the Wehrmacht with the SA. And these men had no experience. They couldn't be a professional military. And Adolf Hitler knew that. And Adolf Hitler was a soldier who respected the German military command and believed that they were the professional people who would defend the country in time of war. And while he was right about a lot of that, he was also wrong about some of it because there were a lot of traitors in the upper echelons of the German military. But, you know, Hitler couldn't foresee that. But you can't just replace an organized army with a multi-century tradition of experience and military discipline with a bunch of street thugs led by some guy that's a half-Bolshevist homosexual. That can't happen, and Adolf Hitler knew it couldn't happen, so he wouldn't allow it. So Ernst Röhm plotted against him.
Yeah.
And some of the other Marxist-leaning people within that got into National Socialism but were never converted to National Socialist ideals, some of those people joined with him.
Yeah.
Now, I believe that the Night of the Long Knives had to happen because the party had just gotten to power, and the Night of the Long Knives had to happen because it would have split the party if it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
There may have been a civil war
if
it didn't happen. And if they were arrested, if Röhm was arrested, and some of the other figures, you know, Strasser and those people in the Night of the Long Knives, there may have been a civil war. And it may have split the party, and the Jews would have won in the end.
And the communists,
The communists would have won because the fascists and the National Socialist Party, with the split party, would not have been able to remain in power.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that Hitler and Goebbels did exactly what had to be done.
Yeah. Plus, they had the information from the Gestapo. They were absolutely sure. It wasn't some guess, but it was absolutely sure that this was coming down. And also, Röhm was meeting with and planning also with leaders in the communist, or not communist, but people in France, too, that he was tied in with.
Right. Well, maybe one night I'll do a segment on the Night of the Long Knives. There's a very good Barnes Review article that appeared about 10 years ago on that topic.
Yeah, I think I have that. I was just reading up on it, and also, you know, when these men were these traitors were executed, who was it? What was that? Oh, God, I lost all my notes here. But what was it? What was his name? The head of Germany there before Hitler. But anyway, he called. Pardon me?
Not at an hour. No.
Oh,
Chris is... Chris is standby.
But, anyway, he calls up Hitler and says...
Yeah, you're talking about von Hindenburg, right?
Hindenburg. Exactly. Hindenburg. Hindenburg calls up Hitler and congratulates him for saving Germany from the communist takeover.
Well, Hitler did do that.
Yeah.
The Weimar Republic, what was Germany's Kerensky government, right? Bolshevism was inevitable. It was just a matter of time.
Hey.
Yeah, Hindenburg. Yeah, he sent a telegram to Hitler and said that Hitler saved Germany from breaking up. So, and you know, you never hear that kind of stuff. You always. That's always the opposite.
Well, because all we hear is the Jewish propaganda.
Right.
We don't hear any real history. We just hear what the Jews want the American and the European people to hear. That's all we hear.
But I was looking for more information on that Otto Strasser. I know I read somewhere there where he was another big traitor.
Well, he was a traitor. His brother was a traitor. His brother was killed in the Night of the Long Knives. And Otto Strasser fled to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And Otto Strasser is a liar. I mean, I didn't have to go far to prove it. I didn't know enough about him the night of the Condit debate that I had, but the next morning, all I had to do was download Douglas Reed's book and read the first two chapters to be able to prove that Otto Strasser was a liar. And Douglas Reed was basically his choir boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Douglas Reed enthusiastically accepted all of Otto Strasser's lies.
Yeah,
because Adolf Hitler, Strasser tried to say that because Adolf Hitler was in the barracks in Bavaria, when the Bolsheviks took over in Bavaria, that proves Hitler was a communist, and that's a lie. When you actually go back and look at the history of the period when the Bolsheviks government took over and they only had it for a very short time, right? When the Bolshevik government took over in Bavaria. The Bolshevik leaders tried to dismiss the regular army, and they hired their own.
Mm-hmm.
So the regular army, when the Free Corps marched into Bavaria, the regular army signed up with the Free Corps, right? They joined the Free Corps to fight the Bolsheviks. That's exactly what happened. Hitler was on the good side. He was on the right side. And Strasser... tried to turn that into a lie.
Right.
Well, I had the facts spelled out in a paper on my site that I had written the next morning after my discussion with Condit, where I took citations from Douglas Reed's book on Strasser and put them together with the correct citations from Mein Kampf, where Hitler explains where he was, and with a few facts of history to prove that Hitler was on the right side of history, not on the communist side, that Otto Strasser is a liar.
Yes.
It's on the front page of the Mein Kampf site still.
Yeah, Strasser, he and Goring didn't get along either. Goring didn't like him either.
Well, Strasser was a Bolshevik.
Oh.
He was a Marxist.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of those who had found National Socialism, but did not convert to National Socialism.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, you know, it's very easy to infiltrate a movement that's still relatively in its youthful stages and to pollute its doctrines. I mean, look at how many people we have in Christian Identity that are doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're signing up as Christian Identists, and they're really not Christian Identists. A lot of them are still universalists. A lot of them are still, the British Israel. Look at how early British Israel was corrupted by Edward Hein and the thinking that the Jews were Judah.
Yeah.
You know, it's a perfect example. And today we have certain identity pastors in Chicago that still want to save Negroes, Mexicans, and Canaanites. I don't get it.
And they'll find out.
But when a movement is in its youth and it's being defined, it's very easy to infiltrate it and corrupt it. That's why we have guys like Pete Peters that claim to be Christian identity that were insisting on baptism rituals, right? And that's just that's just a Catholic ritual. That's sacramentalism. You know, so
yes.
The debate over the philosophies and doctrines of a new movement is always a fiercely fought one. That's the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, controlling a nation's opinions and the media and everything is a deadly weapon. Deadly weapon in the wrong hands, as we've seen everywhere now. And all
well, I mean, we lost England in the 1690s, right, with the Bank of England, right? Well, we lost America in 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act.
Yep.
Well, once the Jews get the right to exclusive right to create your money, then it's only inevitable they're going to end up with all your property. People don't understand that because they don't understand how basic economics works. They don't look at the grand scale of things.
Mm-hmm.
That they only look at their next dinner.
Yep, those who control the gold make the rules, as I said.
Well, what else do we have going on in Europe? Dorcas had sent me a link to a video that claimed that the Pope and the Queen were accused of pedophilia in a court. I didn't get the chance to watch that yet, but it looks pretty explosive, and maybe she'd want to explain that to us.
Well, it was Queen Mappa. I mean, that's the first time I'd heard it, and I was amazed, absolutely amazed. And to think you could stand in Trafalgar Square and make those utterances was incredible. But he was accusing the Queen Mother of paedophilia with another young girl, and the Queen kept quiet about it. I don't know, I can't think of the man's name now, but Patrick Jordan sent it down here.
I saw the email.
It's the first one, and Dr. Carly had seen it, because don't forget that she lost her son, who was being abused by her husband, and she's not even allowed see her son now, so she had a great interest in the paedophilia bit of that YouTube. So the other just came, you know, about the riots came on after, but I believe that paedophilia is a pet topic of hers as well that she fights for. And it was amazing. I've never heard anything about the Queen Mother. And they reckon where does he get this information from? And
right.
If he's,
I mean, it's got to be supported in some way.
Right.
Otherwise,
well,
foundation.
He was saying that England is a dirty country, in so many words. And when you think all the top people are all got their fingers in the bowl of paedophilia, as we know. So it's more common than one realizes. And he.
Oh, I agree with you on that. I don't see that one should accept without some foundation.
Yeah.
The Queen or Queen Mother into this.
No, I mean, they were his statements. I don't know, you know, I was amazed. And the Pope, of course. And they're all sort of in it together. That was the impression he was given.
Well, there's something that I have to follow up yet on, but I have the pertinent articles. There were statements made by this Benedict, this so-called Pope, right? I hate to even use the term, but we have to speak in terms that people understand. There's statements made by him that are basically seem to be trying to force an approval of pedophilia.
Yes.
That there were statements made by him saying that pedophilia is natural, and that men have always done it, and it was considered normal until a couple of years ago.
Well, the Catholic Church have always been peddling that line because they're celibacy, that they're imposed upon people, so unnatural. They've always pushed that line.
Well, right, but it's amazing to me that the Pope is pushing it today in public, and there's no outcry. There should be massive outcry.
Yes, and on his YouTube, he brought out that in the Vatican, they've got a law, they tried to lower the age of consent. Well, if they're all celibate, he says, why are they making these laws? I mean, so he had a point. He had some very good points about the age of consent.
Do they want to lower it again over here?
Well, this
oh, they're always trying to lower it.
Yeah, I heard they're trying to get to 14 now.
Wow, that's disgusting.
Yes.
They'll never stop.
It's unbelievable.
No, they'll never stop until, like Alan Truett said, until they get it in line with their Talmud, they'll never stop. Well, when it's in line with the Talmud, then they'll stop.
Yeah, they want our children's ass.
We do have some very effective organizations fighting. And the Christian Institute, their lawyers are there full time, and they never give up. And we who support that institute are writing letters doing our part as well. So there is a battle going on. We're not just sitting back and letting it happen.
No, and this man did bring up Holly. I can't think of her surname.
Gray. Holly Gray.
Yeah, he brought her up. So I thought, well, he's well informed. You know, his original outcry was about paedophilia and how. Mm-hmm. But then he did another YouTube, of course, on the riot. So, but he was very forthright.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is there any fallout at all in the news in Britain from the John Anthony Hill case?
From the what?
The John Anthony Hill case, the 777 case. Remember the guy that made the 7/7 film, and they tried to put him in prison for it.
I haven't heard anything.
Well, I'm going to put a link in here, and it's from that case. This stems from that case, right? And it's xlpolitics.blogs.com, UK, United Kingdom. Landmark case could stymie legal system, clean not valid monarch. And from what I've heard, John Anthony Hill proved his innocence by proving that the laws are invalid because the Queen's not a valid monarch.
And on what basis was she not a valid monarch?
Well, because she hasn't upheld the laws. She hasn't upheld the Constitution of England. She hasn't upheld the constitutional documents of England, and no laws in England is supposed to be contrary to the Bible.
Yes. Oh, I didn't recall something. I don't think it's been in the press.
Well, let me read parts of this. If everyone began using this defense tomorrow in all of the Commonwealth courts and in the United States, I don't know how, but the entire legal system could be brought to its knees in a matter of weeks, if not days. For those of you who have been following the John Anthony Hill case, it is great to be able to share that he was acquitted on the 12th of May, 2011, and I understood this then, right, of the ridiculous and politically motivated charge of attempting to pervert the course of justice. For those of you less familiar with this landmark case, John Anthony Hill is the producer of the documentary film 7/7 Ripple Effect. For more details about this extraordinary case and the trial itself, please visit the following links, and they offer three links. There are two very important precedents that were established with this case that need to be studied in detail. There was a preliminary argument presented to the court to challenge both the jurisdiction and the sovereignty of Elizabeth Battenberg Mountbatten, which was based on two distinct points, the first being she was knowingly and with malice
afterthought, coronated on a fake stone in 1953 and has never been lawfully crowned. Well, in England, the courts are beholden to the Queen, right? That there are those who may wish to argue that this point is irrelevant, as Judge Jeffrey Vincent Pagan did at the trial, wrongly thinking the coronation is just a ceremony because she has been pretending to be the monarch for over 58 years. In actual fact, the coronation is a binding oath and contract requiring the monarch's signature, which brings us to the second point. At that coronation ceremony, Elizabeth signed a binding contract before God and the British people that she would do her utmost to maintain the laws of God. This she solemnly swore to do with her hand placed on the sovereign Bible before kissing the Bible and signing the contract. Please note well that in the law of God, found in the first five books of the Bible, man-made legislation is strictly prohibited. The very first time that she gave royal assent to any piece of man-made legislation, she broke her solemn oath with God and with the British people, and she ceased to be the monarch with immediate effect. Well, supposedly that was this John Anthony Hill's defense, and supposedly he won. I would like to know more details.
We didn't hear about that.
That argument then would apply to every previous monarch.
And it would apply to every case in Britain.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't have all those niggers over there. That's against the Bible, too.
I did hear it was about the throne. It was a false stone.
Yeah, but that was only the first point, Dorcas.
Yeah, that's right. But we didn't hear anything about the rest of it.
No, but Bill's just read out the other points as well, that she didn't govern according to the law of God. But then neither did any of the previous monarchs.
Well, of course not. But she broke her contract, and he used that as a legal device to beat his case. I'd like to know more details about it. Yeah. I really would. I think that's important.
Phillip, he isn't white, so she broke that.
We don't know that, Annie. No. We don't know that. Repeating things that other people have said.
Yeah.
Don't know that about Philip.
I would think that something like that, that they would, they'd have close ties to that. I mean, they would make sure that bloodline was right. I mean, it's just like this one, this gal that does this, Tom and Kate, I call her. I mean, she has Jewish blood in her.
Are we sure of that, or are we just repeating what other people have been saying?
Her
mother made the name of Goldstein.
Yeah, Goldsmith, I think it is, something Goldsmith. Like that. It's Gold something.
Mm. In my family history, we've got Golden Sachs, and it happens to be a corruption of a Huguenot name, which is Colin Sacchi. So, you can't just go by a name.
Yeah, and Goldsmith actually was a type of work. People that worked with gold, gold ornaments and smelting gold and stuff were called goldsmiths.
Well, there are some white goldsmiths from what I can gather.
Mm-hmm.
In British history, right?
Yeah.
They weren't all Jews.
No. No blacksmiths.
Countenance, you shall know them.
And blacksmiths aren't necessarily black, right?
No.
But I think Judith is a golden Saxon, so that's my opinion.
A golden Saxon, how lovely.
That's what those British, when we want to start a war, we stay on good terms with our brothers across the pond, especially me being over here.
Exactly.
Don't want anything to start now. I'm a long way from the shores of America.
About a car of
anybody.
Robert, you're terrible. That audio is terrible.
So if we can just go back to, you were talking, Bill, about the rioters at the beginning, which was most interesting today. On the news, it was said that 25% of all the rioters that were convicted had more than 12 previous convictions.
Yes.
In fact, they
yes.
averaged 15 per person, and they were majority were under 20.
Well, they're criminals. That's what they do.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of poverty, and I put these figures forth in I think in my Philadelphia article. Well, blacks are 12% of our population, Negroes, right? They're 12 to 15% of our population, but children in poverty are also 12 to 15% of our population. Now, since blacks are not, and that's, I'm sorry, children alone are 11.6% of our population are in poverty. Okay, the number of children as a total percentage of the population, I think, is 11.6 or 11.9. Now, of course, those children have parents, right? So the people in poverty are much greater than the percentage of blacks as a whole, and since not all blacks are in poverty by any means, there are many more whites than there are in poverty than there are blacks in poverty in this country, the United States, and that can be proven from the statistics. Black crime and black violence are consistently blamed on black poverty, but if there are more whites in poverty than blacks, why aren't the whites criminals, and why aren't the whites consistently violent? Why aren't there white flash mobs? And there are probably two or three times more non-blacks in poverty than there are blacks in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see white flash mobs. We don't see whites looting stores. Well, we don't see whites robbing people and anywhere near the percentage of times that blacks are found to be robbing people. When robberies occur, they are, the greater number of violent crimes, robberies, murders, thefts are committed by blacks. Many more times than whites, even though blacks are a much smaller portion of the population.
Yeah, that's a good question.
To blame, and I'm sure in England, there's probably just as many lower class whites as there are lower class blacks.
Yeah.
And you can probably look at the poverty numbers and see that there are just as many poor whites as there are poor blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody wanted to research the poverty numbers by race in Britain, if they publish them.
Mm.
However, we don't see whites rioting. All of the last 20 or so riots in Britain have all been perpetrated by blacks. And it always results in all the stores being looted and pillaged.
Yeah.
And there are at least as many poor whites who don't go rioting, looting, and pillaging.
Well, they had some of them over here that were looting. They were interviewing them. I don't know if you girls seen that, Dorcas or Tia, but I think it was on the BBC. But they were just, of course, bragging about how they got there. So they got new widescreen TVs and filled up on the narcotics from robbing the Robin Hoods and all these places, and it was like that's a free for all. That's the thing.
Well, the black area gets hit with the blackout, and all the big screen TVs get looted. And the black area gets hit with the hurricane, and all the big screen TVs get looted.
Yeah, everything gets looted.
A Negro gets shot by the cops, and all the big screen TVs get looted.
Yeah, they love it. That's their thing. But you know, it's so funny. It's typical. I remember the riots they had in '65. Of course, I was pretty young, but I still remember that they burned their whole city down, and they didn't have any food or anything. And they were begging for over in Los Angeles in the riots of back in '65. And I remember that they were crying on TV because all their supermarkets and everything were all gutted out and burned and looted, burned, and they were crying to high heavens for old Whitey to bring them something to eat.
Well, what came over in this video, man who was making the video said that we're not getting the right news, but the middle classes don't know what's going on. Well, that is so true, because it's never ever on the news. But the thing was, he wasn't on the side of the middle class who are the stabilizers in this country. He was on the side of all these black youths. He was making a true statement, but what was his point? He was against the middle class. Well, once that goes, everything will collapse.
Well, right. He was talking about a few bankers getting billions, but that the bankers don't represent white England.
No.
Who are the majority of the taxpayers and the people that actually build and contribute and maintain the society?
No.
The bankers are just a few Jewish looters, and you can't. Liberalism plays into the hands of the Jewish looters. The Jewish looters fill the nation up with aliens to purposely tear down the middle class, and then the liberal from among the middle class, or the white ethnic majority of the nation, liberal from among that white majority, goes and caters to the aliens that the Jewish looters filled the nation with.
Absolutely.
So he's working on the side of the Jewish looters while he condemns them.
Yeah.
And he doesn't distinguish the looters from the white ethnic majority that is the fabric of the nation.
That's absolutely spot on.
It's not the working white family in the suburbs of London who made off with the $14 billion in bailout money or the £14 billion in bailout money.
No. You know, I've got the feeling, you know, that things are going to collapse, and the quicker the better.
Well, that's what's supposed to happen, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're told will happen, and we can't do anything until it does happen.
No.
I don't know if you heard my Matthew 24 and 25 discourses yet, but that's exactly what's supposed to happen.
I haven't heard this week. I've had visitors. I'm a bit behind.
Oh, well, it's stuff I covered a couple of weeks ago. Matthew chapter 24 and Matthew chapter 25 are all about eschatology, right? They're all about the time of
hand. Yes. I did hear those.
And it's very clear from the parable of the 10 virgins that when things do collapse and we are called to execute the judgment of Yahweh, that only half of us are going to hear the call.
Yeah. Yes, that's very, very interesting. I've never heard the 10 virgins in that manner before. I think people down through the ages have put their own spin on these things without really going, they don't follow.
Well, of course they do, because they read the Bible a verse or a paragraph at a time. They don't take any context.
No.
The parable of the 10 virgins has nothing to do but with the time and the end. That's the questions that the apostles were asking Christ, and that's the answer he was giving. And all of Matthew 24 and 25 are that answer.
Yeah.
Two chapters. It's not until Matthew 26 that Matthew wrote, and after saying all of these things.
Yes, very.
Most of these people that interpret the Bible, they get to the end of chapter 24. It says chapter 25. They stop. and disconnect that from his discourse in chapter 24. That's why I said that my Matthew 20, chapter 25 program was really Matthew chapter 24, part 3. That's what it was.
Yes. Yes, they do just pick that out, don't they? Time of the end and that's it. Mm. Yes.
Well, in Matthew chapter 25, we have three parables all describing the time and the end. And that's the 10 virgins. Half of us are going to be caught up in Babylon. And that's the unrighteous steward, the people whom Yahweh puts, you know, over our race, the white people in positions of power and authority who abuse their brethren rather than protecting them. That's the unrighteous steward. And then the parable of sheep and the goats and the separation of the nations by God. Not of individuals, of nations. Ethnicities.
Mm.
And everybody that's not a sheep is a goat and goes into the lake of fire, period. That's the parable. There's no third choice.
So it's all taking shape now, isn't it? I mean, when you see our Prime Minister and the Prime Minister of France trotting over to Libya and going, I mean, I'm sure nobody in this country even knows what it's all about. Why is he there? Why are they, I mean...
It's called piracy, stealing. No, 21st century resource wars.
I mean, how can we feel pride in our nation like we used to? I mean, Edward Elgar turned in his grave in Kipling. We've got no pride now, no glory. An Englishman's word was his bond at one time. They're even trying to do away with, we have this concert every summer, the proms. They're watering that down now. We used to have beautiful classical music first for about 8 weeks. Now we had Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers music from their film. They're dumbing everything down, and they probably, I didn't hear them this year, but if they can do away with singing without singing Land, Hope and Glory at the end, they will do that. They're dismissing everything English. And they're bringing up everything we do wrong, they're bringing that up in the news, so no one can have any pride in anything. It's so obvious, I don't know why people can't see it.
But there are movements now of people are recognising what's they weren't before, you know, like UK local rebellion. And you've got the UK column, the newspaper. So, you know, that see that something, and they gather with like-minded people.
Yes, I agree. Peter Hitchens in the Daily Mail, I just have great regard for that man until last week when all the 9/11 10-year ceremony was on. Peter Hitchens reckons it was the Palestinians that did all that.
Well, he thinks the Jews are God's chosen people. What else do you expect?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Peter Hitchens thinks that Israel is full of God's chosen people. Yeah, no, in the Middle East, so we're all in that sort of view.
But to blame it on Yasser Arafat, the 9/11, I mean, I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, they really did a good spin on all that. That 9/11.
Yeah, we've had it all the week, haven't we?
No, there was just... You've got to admit that media, those Jews in the media are just absolutely professionals.
Yeah,
propaganda.
They are. Yes,
but
it's
only while you're prepared to watch television, turn it off. It doesn't hurt you at all.
No.
Yeah.
True. True.
And all it does is irritate you.
That's why I try not to watch.
Watching it, yeah.
Don't always succeed.
No.
Sometimes other people said, by choice. I don't want to.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that idiot that's in the White House, at Obama. I just can't. It just really gets me.
Don't upset me.
I can't help it. It really gets me. And they stick it up for him, too. Even in my family, they stick up for him.
I know.
I have a quote here. I want you to tell me who wrote this. Everything that may be said of that kind of work, and he's talking about the development of community among men, right? Everything that may be said of that kind of work, which is the fundamental condition of providing food and the basic means of human progress, is true even in a higher sense of work that is done for the protection of man and his civilization. The renunciation of one's own life for the sake of the community is the crowning significance of the idea of all sacrifice. And this way it is, in this way only, it is possible to protect what has been built up by man and to assure that this will not be destroyed by the hand of man or of nature. Who do you think said that?
Tesla.
Right.
Was it from Mein Kampf?
Page 169. Page 169. The readiness to sacrifice one's personal work and, if necessary, even one's life for others, shows its most highly developed form in the Aryan race. The greatness of the Aryan is not based on his intellectual powers, but rather on his willingness to devote all his faculties to the service of the community. Well, you see, this has been broken in our race through the Jewish promotion of individualism, the me generation, the consumerism and individualism and the stroking of ego and the television and the Frankfurt School have broken this sense of community and race out of the Aryan man.
Yes, absolutely. That is so visible in the younger generation. I don't know how many generations.
Well, when you understand Christianity and Christ's beckoning to follow me, what did Christ do? He sacrificed his life for his kindred, for his people, right? For his race.
Mm-hmm.
And where to follow him and sacrifice our lives for our race, and if we all did that, we would be unbeatable, right?
Right.
Yes.
So when I say Adolf Hitler's, you know, National Socialism is built on Christian philosophy, it's to anybody that actually knows what Christianity is, it's perfectly clear.
Yeah.
It's a Christian fundamental.
Yeah, it's another thing, too, getting back to Hitler when he was coming into power and everything, when the National Socialists, they were fighting a battle to the death. They were getting hit and they were getting murdered left and right. They were getting jailed by communist Bolshevik Jews that were in power. chief of police there, was Wanowski or whatever his name was, you know, Jewish police chief. They were throwing those the nationalists or the nationalists. They were throwing them in jail every chance they got, and turning a blind eye where the communists slaughtered any of the nationalists. And it just went on. It was war. They were fighting. They were in a death struggle, fighting for their country. No different than any of us, any of the histories of our countries, fighting to save your country, trying to do what was right.
Well, one of my favorite quotes is this one from page 200. If a comrade of ours opens a Jewish newspaper in the morning and does not find himself vilified there, then he has spent yesterday to no account. For if he had achieved something, he would be persecuted, slandered, derided, and abused. Those who effectively combat this mortal enemy of our people, who is at the same time the enemy of all Aryan peoples and all culture. Contrary to all men, right? I mean, how could Adolf Hitler have been a Jew? And wrote that. Can only expect to arouse opposition on the part of this race and become the object of its slanderous attacks. The false accuser. The accuser of our brethren has been cast down, right? I mean, that's the Jew. So many of Hitler's statements are right in line with things that he had to learn in the Bible.
Actually, that Mel Brooks recently, it must have been about a year ago now, had the nerve to go to Germany and in Berlin put on The Great Dictator. You know that farcical musical to make Hitler look a fool?
Yeah.
He actually went to Germany last year to put it on for Germans to look at.
Well, fortunately, I've never seen it.
No, but they made it into a film. It's a parody on Hitler.
Well, that's how the Jews belittle men who were great. They belittle them all the time so that people don't look into them.
Right.
No.
Yep,
no.
They sure do.
I don't know how he had the gall to do it. How disgusting.
Because he's a Jew. That's all they have is gall.
They don't care.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
I'd like to read my favorite quote.
Sure.
For in a world which grows on me, all ideals of human...
You're cutting out a little bit, Judith. Please turn your sensitivity up or down.
Can you hear me clearly now?
Well, I hope so.
Yep.
Start again. For in a world which would gross and all ideals of human beauty...
No, Judith, I'm sorry. You're cutting out again. We'll get it. We'll get it. Don't worry. I know the quote. I got it on my
hang on.
Hitler was a Christian note.
Page 216. I don't know how to alter this.
I would rather hear you read it, but I can if I have to.
I think you might have to if I'm cutting out.
Oh, you're starting well. I'm good now. Go ahead.
It says, for in a world which would be composed of mongrels and negroes, all ideals of human beauty and nobility, all hopes of an idealized future for our humanity be lost forever. On this planet of ours, human culture, civilization are indissolubly bound up with the presence of the Aryan, the exterminated or subjugated. Then the dark shroud of a new barbarian era would enfold the earth. Now, isn't
that absolutely? Amazing.
Well, without a doubt, and that's absolutely true. And we see that expressed. I'm going to put this quote right now, if I could find it. What was that movie on that I put on Christogenia? It was a Scandinavian man. It was like a cartoon.
Did you see that cartoon video of the dark races and the Jew behind the takeover of the dark races in European nations?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was it a recent one?
I had it on my front page a couple of months ago, but it worked its way down and eventually fell off.
Yeah, I saw it.
I'll try to find it.
Is it still on there somewhere?
Well, it's somewhere in the video list in my site, I hope. I've got too much stuff, right?
Yeah. I think we've lost Stereo Man now, have we?
I haven't heard him for a while. I don't know where he went.
No.
I think he found Ellen or something. Or Nibiru. He's at his telescope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's not on my video list, and I can't find it. I have too much stuff.
I do like your Rudyard Kipling poems in the Saxon Messenger.
Yeah, they're wonderful, aren't they? I really like Kipling.
Yes.
But Judith picks most of the poems, to be honest.
Yeah.
I have to give her credit for that. Yeah, I had read a full volume of Kipling about 7 or 8 years ago, and wish I had time to read it again. He didn't have quite everything right, but he was just about there, and he was there on the race issue. I mean, White Man's Burden proves that, right?
Yeah.
He actually supports that line of White Man's Burden. I'm gonna keep bringing that up because that's actually supportive of the idea of creation of the other races that Clifton and I have. What when Kipling says that the Orientals are half devil and half child, right?
Yeah.
That's awfully convenient for me, but I had to throw that in there.
Yeah.
Kipling seems to have understood that. Otherwise, how could he call them that? Half devil and half child.
Yeah, there's no punch in it, was there? And I like his poem, It, you know. That's the one I know best of all.
We've already done that, haven't we?
Have you done that one?
So, yes, yeah. It's probably the most well known these days, I think.
Yes, it is.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Which one is that?
If you can meet with. Well, I'll have to go and get it out. I've got it here somewhere.
Yeah, I can't. July. I think it was in July.
Oh, really?
Well, we've certainly used.
If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, that make allowance for their doubting too. You can wait and not be tired of waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good, nor talk too wise. And there's 3 more paragraphs. Excellent words now.
Yeah, superb, aren't they?
Well, I found that video.
Yes. And the recessional, I did take that out and copied that out. That's the messenger. They're excellent.
Yeah, we did it in June.
Oh. Sorry about that, you guys.
So, how's the new grandson?
He's good. Beautiful boy. Beautiful boy. He, real long legs. He's about 22 inches long. Pretty long.
Good.
But, it's amazing just what women handle babies and everything. It's mothers and stuff. They just seem to have that touch. and holding it and starts crying and everything, and then hands it back over to his mom, and it gets quiet. And then all the babies, in the ward there, all these ladies, there must have been, I would say, probably 10 mothers in there that just all gave birth and all had their babies, and one would start crying, and the next thing you know, they're all crying.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
It's nice. It was all white. I think there was one Asian in there, but nothing like it would be in California, in Southern California, or anything like that.
Well, ancient Israelites, they used to have a birthing stool. They never laid in a bed to give birth, because it was only when one of our kings, they wanted to make sure that the right heir to the throne, they had them laid out on the bed, but that is the most unnatural way of giving birth. The ancient Israelites used to have a birthing stool. Don't forget, they wanted to get rid of the babies. I don't know whether they were in Egypt, but they kept saying that the Israel women were very vigorous and their babies were being born before they had a chance to kill them, at birth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So whether that will ever come back, well, it should do if it's a more natural form. Always interested me.
Just go back, 50 years ago or even 100 years ago, and how things have changed since then, and women getting worse, and all the problems they've had. The babies and the mothers just died. I mean, what would happen if the mother couldn't dilate? Bleed to death, and just it must have been pretty bad.
So,
I think it's still pretty bad today. What women and their newborns. There's no excuse giving a newborn day of its birth a hepatitis B vaccination.
Yeah.
And another thing too is cesareans. They seem like they're giving all these young girls cesareans. They're just jumping. I find it funny that most of all the girls you talk to, they all have a cesarean. It's like they don't give the women a chance. Just go ahead, get in there and get it done and get it out of here,
Yeah, that's popular, isn't it, today?
Is there something to that, or? I've never heard of so many. Maybe I'm not keeping close tabs at it.
Well, hospitals like the babies to be working hours, not during the night when they've got few staff available. So, you know, a cesarean for their convenience.
Well, I had 6 kids, and 3 of them were by cesarean, but I didn't have to go through any of them. And the other 3 were by natural childbirth. But there's a trend now. Well, natural. My wife had to have epidurals because she just couldn't take the pain for the first one. But there's a movement now to have babies in a pool of water.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Mike Delaney's wife actually had their last child like that. And the child's perfectly healthy with no midwife even.
No
assistance. It was just him, her, and a pool of water.
Wow.
And that's really brave of her, right? But yeah, it was supposedly
brave of him.
Yeah. It was supposedly no problem.
Yeah. I mean, if she's already given birth and she had, then I think it's a good idea.
Well, right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's nothing worse than a hospital birth when they intervene. It is absolutely horrendous.
I thought it was, and I watched all my child. I watched all 6 of my children be born, right?
Right.
And 3 of them were by cesarean section, my second wife. We just make an appointment, you know. I was, you know, it sounded great to me. You have that whole young urban professional upbeat image of, and you think that's the coolest thing in the world. It's just call up and make an appointment for when your kid's going to be born, right? And it just fits right in with that whole neat false system of security that you have when you're It's a really artificial life, right? And that's 3 of my children were born that way. But my daughter, my first child was, my wife went through hell. It was like 20 hours of labor.
Right.
It was rough. But my second one, after she gave birth to that first one, the second one was born in an hour. She was in labor for an hour. That was it.
Wow.
I barely got her to the hospital in time.
Yeah, I just I noticed that there's a lot of girls that have a cesarean. I was thinking maybe a money making thing, but over here with your national insurance, I don't think it would be profitable. But
with her second child, what was her first child? She never went into labor, and they tried to induce it. And she was a week overdue, and they couldn't induce labor, so they gave her a C-section.
Yeah.
And once she had a cesarean section, there was no question about the other ones, about the next 3 children. They were all cesarean section.
Do you have to have a cesarean after?
They won't deliver I don't think they'll deliver a child by anything but cesarean once you have one.
Wonder why.
Because they think it's going to be a complicated birth, so they do that.
Yeah, and I understand when they give you cesarean that they remove all your innards, you know?
Do they?
No, I mean, I watched her cesarean sections. I watched them. I watched them cut her open. I watched them crank her apart and cut the uterus and take the baby out. I watched them sew everything back up. They didn't take anything out that they shouldn't have. I had a protest. I did joke with the doctor to scrape a little of the fat off from her abdomen. But
I know, Carol, I noticed they took her insides. They took them out from what they told me.
They shouldn't take anything out but the things they have to take out, like the placenta.
They did that. As I say, I know when I had surgery on my back that one time a few years ago, they did it. They went in through my stomach They took everything out, and it took about three or four days to reactivate, start back up again, or just to start functioning. Waiting to hear it gurgling and everything, and it's amazing.
Well, I don't know what they could take out that you wouldn't miss eventually, right?
And pop it out. The doctor was telling me he had everything just sitting right there. I don't know. But,
I watched my wife's C-sections pretty closely, and I can pretty much assure you that they didn't take anything out except baby parts, right?
Yeah, they really don't. I don't understand that either. I have to find out about that. But because the baby, I guess, sits on top of the stomach or the intestines, right? Am I right? Yeah, I think so.
Well, yeah, the intestines are in the back of the body cavity, and the uterus is in the front.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I worked with a guy who delivered all seven of his babies right at home. And I think I mentioned it before that he had some trouble there, financial trouble, and they took his house off him. And he had a mobile home, and they all had a motor home. It was actually just a big camper, and he piled all the kids. They lived in the motor home. And social services tried to take his kids away from him. Well, they had him for about a day, but they had to give him back because of the mere fact that he had him home birth. He didn't have a birth certificate or anything. And
wow.
When he was married, he got married, and they just wrote it their marriage in the Bible, recorded it in the Bible. So there wasn't any type of state contract, so they couldn't take his children. And that's what he told me. The fact that they did not have birth certificates, they could not take his children.
Oh.
And I've heard that before. This other man by the name of Richard McDonald, the state citizenship. He had a state citizenship. He taught state citizenship, and said that this is all tied in with states or state control. When you sign birth certificates and marriage license and all this kind of
it gives the state the
power to come in and take your children off you.
Yeah.
If you don't have it, they can't take it off you. And he was an example that that happened.
That's interesting to know, isn't it?
Yeah, and I looked up that guy Richard McDonald, and he's still on the internet. And I guess he's still successful with his with his state citizenship teachings or whatever it is, living.
Well, there's something similar in this country as well, and I know people who are deeply into this. It works very well for them.
Yeah.
So you would never sign your name other than, say, Jane of the family of Smith. You wouldn't write Jane Smith.
Yeah, this also goes with driver's license and stating that we have a right to travel. It's not a privilege, but it's a right to travel. But, it's a whole... You start getting tied in with the courts and all that kind of stuff and all that litigation and trying to represent yourself and everything. It is a big... Although Eustace Mullen says it was a lot of fun representing himself in court.
You have to be sure of your information.
And you have to have nothing that they could take.
Yeah, that's right. And you got to do a lot of study and a lot of work and be a good typist, because you got to type up all your motions and everything. I know I went through all that with my friend Jean Snyder. It was pretty bad. It was a lot.
I'm not looking to burst anybody's bubble. I know there's a lot to it, but I I'm going to do a program about that with Herbal Vandal in the near future. About the hopes and false hopes behind the UCC and the sovereign citizens and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because a great number of those people are just getting others in trouble with what they're teaching them, right?
Yes, yeah.
And like you said, if you don't have every I dotted and every T crossed, you're just going to get yourself in a heap of trouble. And you have to fight your battles wisely. A lot of these people are just, they're getting out and ringing up, they're going out and ringing up debts, thinking that they're just going to be miraculously somehow relieved of these debts because they notice UCC code. That's just crazy. Mm-hmm.
It's ungodly as well.
Well, right, because it's that they're looking for something for free, and that's stealing, no matter how you look at it. Yeah, if I take a car from your car lot and made an agreement to compensate you in the manner in which you want to be compensated, which might be 25,000 Federal Reserve notes, and I don't give you those notes and try to pull some sleight of hand, that's stealing, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah. Well, I did that. I went in pro se a couple times, and I wasn't looking. I was looking to steal. They were stealing all my money at work and taxes and everything, and I got fed up, and I tried to take my company to court, And
I'm sure that didn't work out too good.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you. Just trying to look up the laws and go into the into the law library and then you got to write up. I mean, you got to know, like you say, you got to know what you're talking about and everything, and you got to follow court procedure and I don't know. It was it was a lot of work. You really have to know. I mean, I know I listen to Eustace Mullins, and he makes it sound like it's just so easy and everything, but I know it's not easy. There's a lot of work. I'm sure if you kept doing it or something like that, and I don't know, you have to know what you're doing. But you got to, I think you have to know law. You have to study law. You got to be like a lawyer or something if you're going to do it yourself.
Well, why would you want to catch your life up in their system, knowing that it's an unrighteous system?
Well, at that time, myself, I wouldn't bother with it now, but at that time, myself, I was working, and I was productive, and I just got fed up with the company taking all my money and taxes, and so, I heard that, I just didn't get that connection, I didn't have that connection that, like, when I met that guy, Otto Skinner. He filled me in on what they call the best kept secret, and that taxes can only be collected as a excise tax and all that kind of stuff. That was before I met him. It was tough. I had to file bankruptcy and do all that myself, and it was just wow. It's a lot easier to have a lawyer, but the lawyers require a lot of money, too. And you can't find...
Well, my point would be, in the long run, is it's probably a lot cheaper to pay your taxes. That's why Christ took the coin and he said, whose inscription on this is this? And they said, Caesar's. And he said, well, give to Caesar what is Caesar's so you could give the things to God, which are God's. And when you look at your dollar bill in your pocket, I mean, I know that you feel that you've earned it, and I'm not debating that one minute. But, it says U.S. Federal Reserve on it. The money basically belongs to the damn Jews that printed it, right? And sometimes it's easier, rather than catch your whole life up in fighting the government, it's easy to take that portion of your life that they require of you and pay it in taxes. And that's not a cop-out. It's just that I've seen men in prison and in the outside world devote their whole lives to fighting the government over the income tax issue, when the bottom line is that if you're in my sandbox and I'm the biggest kid in the sandbox, you ain't playing with my sand.
Yeah. And if I want what's yours, I'm going to take it. And you ain't doing nothing about it. Well, the government's the big kid in the sandbox. And the government has all the sand and gives us a little. Or takes our sand and leaves us a little. And that's the way it is. And we as a people, for our disobedience, are being punished with this government by God. That's Romans 13. That's just the way it is. And we have to accept that we're going to have to pay these taxes if we want to be able to do things to alert our brethren and build the kingdom of God. It's easier just to pay the stupid taxes. And I know it's wrong, and I know it's a tyranny, but it's either that or spend all your time fighting the government and none of your time building the kingdom. You're certainly not going to be able to build the kingdom sitting in prison, which is where they will throw you at their convenience. And even a lot of these UCC people, the sovereign citizens, like Judith said, that every once in a while we win a small victory. So-and-so got his kids back.
Yeah, White Harold.
And that's a small victory because every once in a while we meet people in the government who are fair. But you know something?
Mm-hmm.
They would have found a way not to give those kids back if they didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you go fight us in court.
I mean, Hector Steele was a lawyer, and look at the struggle he's having.
Right.
And look at where he's sitting.
I
like that quote that Ron Paul said, that the government has more money and guns. You know, that's why they take your taxes like they do. Of course it's illegal, but they have more money and they have more guns. That's a great answer.
Yeah.
It's true. Endless amount of money to fight you. I had to learn my lesson the hard way. But I'm telling you, it was very stressful. That was very stressful those days. I don't know, old Gene and George Snyder, they really helped me out a lot through all that.
Well, right, but they also spent their lives fighting the government. They could have probably been doing more productive things.
Yep. I think that was one reason why I got into it. I mean, that was a little influence from Gene, you know. So.
And they had to, in their older age, they had to hide all their assets. They had to bury it all with a lawyer.
And everybody else's name. Yeah.
Right. And is that worth it?
I was right there with them. I know.
In the long run, is it worth it? You spent your whole life with this big distraction.
Yeah. Well, you know, you try to compare it. That if you were on your deathbed, would you say to yourself, would this be... is this important?
Yeah.
I just remember...
Well I had a... I was confronted with a choice back in 1998, right? Because there were people all around me who I got along with, who loved me, respected me, who wanted me to get into law stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose to get into history and Greek instead, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I probably made the right choice.
Yeah. Sure you did. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, if you enjoy it, you know, I think the most important thing is if you enjoy it. If you enjoy, it's like this message. It's almost like food. And when you understand it, you know who you are and why you're here and what's going on and who the enemy is. It's very enjoyable to learn. It all makes sense to you, to myself, because you feel like you're part of it now. And that's what I think is great about Christian identity, because you're part of this. You're part of those people that they talk about in the Bible. You're part of Israel. That is our ancestors that came out of Egypt, and Moses was our ancestor, and I think that's pretty special.
Well, it's absolutely more important than wasting 12 years of my life studying the UCC and trying to get myself out of prison and beating my head against the wall, and I might still be in.
Yes.
And I'm going to talk about some of my personal experiences with these people when Vandal and I do this program. But because I know people that came out of prison and put themselves right back in prison thinking they could beat the government at filing this paperwork.
Yeah.
Name some names and give some clear examples that are...
Now, I did read about that guy. His name was Whitey Harrell, who won a court case back in 2004, I believe, or it could have been 2006. But he was, you know, that Freedom to Fascism, I think it was? That movie, Freedom to Fascism.
Yeah, I think I had that movie somewhere. I don't know if I got it posted. Yeah. Some of those movies I wouldn't post.
And that guy, that man, Whitey Harrell, he won that case against the IRS because of the... It was actually the jury asked the judge to show him the proof. Where's the law that says you have to pay federal income tax? But anyway, later on, a few years down the road, same thing. He got dragged back into court again. And I don't know whether he was so sure about himself or whatever, but... He got busted.
Well, the government's not going to let you go.
The jury didn't agree with him.
The government is not going to let you go. Even if you win a little battle, they're going to be there watching your every move, and as soon as they can get you, they're going to get you.
Yeah.
They're not going to let you get away with beating their system.
Yeah, they're pretty...
There's a big kid in the sandbox, and you're not going to win.
I did, you know, there are things. Now, I don't know, because I got to go back and find all my writings and all my notes and everything like that. But I know one thing that before they can do a collection on anybody, there is a six-point program. It's in the IRS code book, but there's a six-point program that they must follow. Or they can start any type of collection. I know you have to have a notice of deficiency and blah, 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 and they go down the road. But there are things that can help you, but you have to go along with what the IRS code says. So outside these six laws or these six motions or whatever it is, and you're going to get nailed. And they just never give up. They never give up. They just wait. You don't file. If you don't file 1 year, they just, you know, usually takes about 3 years, and then here they come.
They're waiting for you to tear your hair out in frustration and give up.
They're going to get you. That's what it's
about. I know.
You know, just like Eustace Mullen said, it is the war. And it is, believe me, because I was there, too. I know what you're talking about, because I was there.
Yeah.
And, but when I look back at it, jeez. I think it was more of my stubbornness than it was anything that...
Well, right, and I don't ever think that it's worth it, that there's other things that we should be doing that are more important than fighting with the government over their income tax or over any other tyranny that they impose over us. Yes, those things are tyrannical. But Christians are told time and again not to worry about the mammon. And we just don't believe those words. I mean, I've seen a lot of otherwise good patriots just deny the efficacy of all of those words of Christ about mammon and riches and money. They'll try to use the UCC, and I've seen them get their asses in a sling over it, and I saw a guy get 15 years because of it, because he tried to profit from the UCC.
And money's not worth it, really.
But they try to become like the bankers. And make their own money. And that really gets them in trouble, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that really upsets them.
And they
can do everything that the banks do, and they think they're right about it. And in a way, they are right about it, except that the government gave the Jews a license to do it. That's the part they're missing, right?
Yeah.
Even though the banking system is unfair and all part of the tyranny that's been imposed on us by international Jewry, that we basically our own people have allowed to happen, even though we know it's wrong, that doesn't mean that we should try to become like them. And if you try to make your own money, you're going to get in real trouble, and that's where a lot of those UCC people end up, and those sovereign citizens and all that. That's where they end up, trying to dismiss their debts with bank drafts that they made themselves, and all kinds of weird stuff like that, and it just gets them in more trouble.
Yeah, and Obama comes in the office, and he, 16,500 more IRS agents. He opened over 250 more IRS offices across the United States.
Yeah, right. It's basically a jobs program.
You know, where's the money, man?
The bureaucracy has become a jobs program in the Obama administration, right? It really has.
Yeah.
That they've tried to create as many bureaucratic jobs as possible to not only gain political favor with their Negro constituents, but also to just about all they've been hiring is blacks and Hispanics.
Yeah.
But also so that they could keep expanding the government and to try to hide some of the problems with unemployment by creating more and more government jobs.
Yeah, and a lot of
the public sector giving them jobs.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, which in turn further burdens whatever private sector is left, and it becomes a vicious cycle, destroying the average taxpayer.
Yeah.
And I heard most of the people that are getting accepted for Social Security and benefits like that are all non-whites.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it.
Who else was this?
Our government lost 100,000. Immigrants.
They did what?
Well, it said it lost them, which means they've lost track of them. Oh, don't know where they are anyway.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the thing about pushing these people into public office, it gives them a sense of superiority.
Yep.
So when you go in and have a query, you're told to wait in line. When these Indians took over the post office, don't make a complaint. You had to go to another window, and you could be in there for hours. And they came in, the man must have bought the franchise of the post office, cleared all the English from behind the counter, and every one of them was an Indian. And that was in the post office where that film was taken of that. May interviewing most people. The post office was right there. But they were Indian. They seemed to have or desk job people. But it gives them a feeling of superiority. It's like when I complained that youth were sitting on my front wall and the woman who I had to complain to was coloured. And they were actually all standing outside my house in a group. And she went back and said, no, there's nothing wrong. And she dismissed it. And I was so mad, I thought I wrote a letter to the head office. And I had this woman up. But I still didn't win. So you see what's happening. They're putting them in positions of authority.
Yes.
So people won't get justice just by them being there. That's what's happening. Sorry. What could one say? It's all wrong. But I was so annoyed when I saw all these Indians in the post office. And I had to put Britain on my form, and I put England, and he crossed it out. And so, this is not England, it's Britain. And it's horrible to be told by some alien.
Well, that reminds me, did you get the CD I sent?
No.
Dorcas, I sent you a CD.
What, recently?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. I sent Judith one too. I couldn't send Danny one because I didn't have his British address.
I didn't receive anything, Bill.
No, I haven't. Maybe it's just flowering coming.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll wait till the next Euro program, and then I go to the post office, right? I'll let you know
as soon as it arrives.
Yes, I
still have the customs forms somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I sent 3 overseas CDs, right? One to Taya, and one to Dorcas, and one to Canada.
Oh, well, I'll look out for it.
Yeah, these should have been there. I mean, usually they're there in 5-6 days. This is over a week ago.
Oh.
Oh, well, the storms delayed things.
Yeah, that's possible. That they're probably floating in Binghamton somewhere.
Oh, well, we have the, you know, allegedly we have the tail end of your hurricane.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. And really, it was just a bit blustery, that's all. But
yeah, like things. A little rain or something.
The tail end of a hurricane.
Yeah.
They had to hype it and create unnecessary fear.
They all the time.
Go out and let it, oh yes, unless it's necessary.
Yeah, that's what the media does. That's the Jews, that they get everybody excited over a hurricane so they can dedicate hours and hours of coverage to it, and then they don't have to tell you how your politicians are sticking the knife in your back.
That's right. Yeah. That's not what they're really doing.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I wonder why the ferryman went.
I soldier said he complained about some kind of food poisoning or something. That German food can be rough sometimes, I guess.
Yes.
German McDonald's. No, I'm kidding.
And then Chris, I did see he wasn't. He didn't come through, did he?
No, Suffolk Man wasn't here today.
Yeah, Bruce wasn't either.
But I'm surprised when he comes. I'm not surprised when he doesn't come.
But we didn't know how to get him from open house to the full.
Yeah. Take care, Otilia. It's good seeing you, Otilia. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, good night.
Even though I didn't get a chance to say anything to you. We'll see you again soon. God bless.
Has anybody, Bill, have you heard any about this... remember this civilian security force that Obama said that he wanted to create? He had that Rahm Emanuel. Remember they made a big issue about that? 2 million.
Oh, yeah, that would have employed 2 million Negroes probably at $50,000 a year apiece. No, that idea kind of died, thankfully.
Did it? Or are they secret?
I think so. I haven't heard anything about it in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's fun. I went last year with my son to the National Zoo in Washington, D.C. And the National Zoo is in a park-like setting, and there are no large parking lots anywhere in the vicinity. There's not even any space for a large parking lot, right? So what they have is they have little clusters of small parking lots all around the zoo, up and down the roads. And you might fit 100 cars here and 100 cars there. Yeah, I mean, they're sizable lots, but they're not for the National Zoo. You need acres and acres of parking space, right?
Right.
Well, in every little parking lot, there were 5 or 6 Negroes in orange or yellow vests, standing around talking to each other in the middle of every lot. And all the parking employees I saw were black. I didn't see a white one. And we were in a couple of the lots because they didn't all have available spaces. And why do we need 5 or 6 parking attendants standing in the middle of the lot talking to each other? And then all of the woman that took my money, my $20, $20 to park at the National Zoo in Washington, right? $20 to park. You could be there for like $12 up to an hour. Who goes to the zoo for an hour? And there's another step, and then it's anything over 2 hours is $20. Well, who goes for an hour to the National Zoo, right? I mean, what, do you run in to see a monkey and run out? Yeah, you know, it's ridiculous. Well, anyway, it's $20 to park for whatever, for anything, you know, over a decent length of time. And on the way out, I thought to myself, my $20 is paying all these Negroes that are just standing around doing nothing.
Yep.
That's why the parking's so high. It's a jobs program for these Negroes.
Yep.
None of whom would have jobs anywhere else if it weren't for the parking attendant job at the National Zoo, I swear. So I thought it was incredible. And there were five or six of them in every lot, just standing around talking to each other.
And
if there are 24 lots there or a dozen lots there, that's 72 people getting paid for doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They're wearing a little orange vest and standing around with their hands in their pocket.
Yeah.
Well, now, I wonder they feel what a lucky life you lead, if that's all they have to do.
Well, I've noticed in the new very big shopping mall, the ones they call villagers, in every shop that you go into, there's one of these flunkies standing at the door, not to open it. They're on the inside, but they look you up and down as though to inspect you to see if you're good enough to come into that shop. You know, if you dress properly or whatever. And then as you come out, they're looking to see if what you bought is in a properly sealed bag, as though you've stolen something. And it's just so, well, it's so unacceptable.
It's degrading.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
But perhaps, I don't know if it's deliberately so, but they're always the same people.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just imagine how boring it would be standing all day long in that position. Most
yeah.
Not for them.
No, not for them. Yeah. They don't have a, they don't understand boredom.
No.
Well,
yeah.
Like we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, they like that stuff. And give them... And, you know, putting that suit on or anything and having a radio in their hand, that's a big thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's almost like having a white woman on their arm.
Yeah.
I know. I used to listen to him, Gavin, talking about it.
Mm.
But all that stuff, you know, women and having this white girl and that.
Has anybody heard any further development about the that British woman kidnapped?
No.
From Kenya? Because I haven't heard anything.
Mm-mm.
Gone very quiet.
They just took her away in a boat, so no one's heard about her, have they? Where she is or anything.
Terrible.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I think she's just finished, right?
Yeah,
probably.
Even if she's alive, she won't want to be when they're done with her.
But, well, the last woman, well, it was a man and wife who were sailing off there, and they were held for more than a year. And
like Somalia.
Yes, and I think... Well, the government said that no money changed hands when they were released, but I don't believe that. And I would imagine that's why they've done it again, as it could be for, you know, taking her as a hostage and that they're just wanting large amounts of money.
Do you think their families cough up the money here? You know, families?
I think somebody does, yeah. They wouldn't have bothered to keep them alive,
no.
Would they, otherwise? And they were hostages for more than a year.
Well, they said that Teddy Roosevelt sent a battleship down to Africa to save an American citizen, something like that, way back when.
Well, when this other couple were actually kidnapped, taken off their boat. There was actually a British destroyer not very far away. They could see what was happening, and their excuse was they didn't dare do anything in case this couple were actually... Yes. So...
They harmed them, yeah. Yeah, you would think how can these little scallywags get away with stuff like that? Not be blasted right out of the water.
Well, some of the radios they've got are so sophisticated, they could only be obtained from the military, such as the Israeli military.
Well, I understand that the Israelis just run rampant through Afghanistan and Iraq, murdering American and British soldiers and shooting down choppers and things like that.
I'm sure most of that probably is the Israeli Mossad. I would bet to try to keep that war going. It's in their interest to keep those wars going. Until we go through the whole Middle East, it's in their interest to keep those wars going.
I mean, if they come right over to America and cause a thing like 9/11, shoot our president and all this kind of stuff, killing our boys over there, there's nothing. You know, the rabbis even said that if the Goyim ever found out what we were doing to them, there wouldn't be any of us left in any of these countries.
Well, a lot of us know what they're doing to us, but the rest of us won't listen. It's crazy.
But
the point's going to come when they will.
Yeah, when they get knocked out of their routine, and like I always said, we all have our routines and everything is nice and cozy, and when you get out of that coziness, when it's interrupted, and I think it's going to happen just boom, just like that, just like 9/11 happened, all in just one day. You're talking about this economy's falling and everything, and I remember speaking with my stepmother before she passed away, and she lived during the Depression or before it, and she was telling me that it just happened, just one morning. I think it was on a, I believe it, maybe it was on a Monday. Or maybe it happened on a Thursday, but it just, boom, one day, that was it. The banks were locked up, they were all closed, and the circulation of money, there wasn't any money in circulation. Money just disappeared. Wasn't any.
Yeah, they stopped loaning money out, people started hoarding it.
And that was it.
Real simple.
Just in one day, it all started.
What about these supermarkets emptying out? I mean, they'll all be emptied in a day.
Yeah, we live on an island here, too, you know. We're on islands. Depend on the food being brought in by air and ship, trucks. It's like I heard, what was it, Manhattan, the island of Manhattan, New York, that within 72 hours there wouldn't be anything to eat on that island.
Right.
Just like that. Boom. Done.
And if you've ever been in close contact with Negroes and Mexicans, they cannot say food. They can't do it. It's not possible. It's not part of them. They can't save anything.
Really?
Because they have no sense of tomorrow.
No. Oh. Oh. So they're coming on time of yours.
And you know who they're coming after.
Well, right.
You know, I know.
Exactly.
I lived in it. I've seen it.
They cannot save food. It's not possible for them to be frugal for 1 minute. And I have a lot of direct experience with that because of my prison time.
Yeah.
Were you a police officer, Bill, before?
No, I was a corrections sergeant.
Huh?
I was a sergeant in a county jail.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. I thought you were a cop.
Well, in New Jersey, you basically are, but I was worked in a county jail.
Oh. But the one thing about the police, the cops are right on the front line. They see it. you see the real world.
Well, right.
You know.
And that's a world that most people are totally disconnected from.
They just don't know. No, no.
And liberals are absolutely disconnected from it. That they don't see them as they existed. It's an incredible disconnect. But they just don't. That they're not able to see what they are. It's I don't know. I can't explain it. It's crazy. I grew up in Jersey City, and I saw the entire seedy side of life and recognized it for what it was, and those people for what they really were at a young age. I can't see. I don't understand how other people don't live in that experience and have the same, you know, the same assessment.
Yeah, but a lot of those people live in their red and white world. They live in, you know, mostly white areas, or maybe even like a multicultural area, but it's mostly white liberals. They don't live like in L.A., this crowd, you know, they don't live down by in Southeast L.A. where we used to live. You know, they lived up in Hollywood in those areas there where they're more policed and all that stuff, although it's, you know, there is crime there, but it's nothing like when you're living close to the gangland, and as they call it now. And you live in those areas there, and you're white, you find out real fast about the race thing. I don't want to hear from any that were trying to tell me about being a racist and all this kind of stuff. Because I got jumped a time just because I was a whitey.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not crying, but that's just what happens. You know, you just, what happens? Why, you just don't live, you know, you live away from them, and it won't happen.
Well, for years in prison, I'd staff up all the new white guys. I'd tell them what time it was. I'd tell them what they could do, what they couldn't do, what they better do, and I tell them all flat out, if you're not a racist, you know, because you'd censor whether a guy was racially aware pretty quick.
Right.
If you're not a racist in 3 months, then I know you're queer. It's that simple. And I was right every time.
Racially aware. That's a good one. That's a good way of putting it. Racially aware.
And if they don't become racially aware in a quick time, then chances are they're sexually deviant, and it works every time. In prison.
Is that what they call picking up soap?
Yeah, right. It's a 100% accurate rule of thumb.
Didn't laugh because you never know when you might get busted.
Would you excuse me? I think I'm going to have to wind down now.
Okay, Dorcas. I'm about to end the program anyway. And thank you for being here, and I'll see you all in, I think, in 3 weeks, because of the way the dates fell, right? The first week in October.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Good night, darling.
God bless.
Good night. God bless.
Good night. Good night. Yep.